bringing a group of people from around the country to Montana to, you know, fix an underground bunker into an Airbnb, where along the way they learn about the steps themselves. We film it, and then we turn it into an educational platform that takes the steps, breaks them up into 90 lessons, and each one of those lessons goes with an episode. And it's a lot of work, you know, but it's a whole nother way of being able to expose people.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
How about a prayer for the atheists and agnostics?
Let's do it.
Thank you, whatever you are, that we are here. We acknowledge we are here. And we acknowledge that we want to do good with the time that we got here. And we hope that whatever you are, do your part to help it find whoever else it needs to find. Amen, as in that's it, and we agree.
Hell yeah.
Amen. I was really awkward with my hands in the middle of your prayer. I wanted to put my hands down, but then I didn't, because I felt like it was going to be more awkward.
You should have
done a hallelujah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show.
Yeah.
You can clap. It's okay.
We got a studio audience.
They're all first timers. They're nervous.
That is our guest, Andrew LaCosta. He's sitting here with us today. Katie is on the ones and twos. Kim is learning the ones and twos. Jason's on quality control. Sarah and I are hosting. We have an in-studio audience.
What's up?
And the title of this episode is From Intern to Editor. So let's welcome Andrew LaCosta to the Most High Show.
Thank you.
So Andrew is now the lead editor here.
Yep.
At Most High Media. And he was also our first paid intern back in 2019-2020.
I was.
And he's recently got a bachelor's degree in digital cinematography.
I did.
And today we're just going to hear the story of Andrew. He's been not here. He's been in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to have him in studio. It's nice to have you back here.
It's nice to be back.
It was nice working with you in the lab the last couple of days.
Yep.
And glad you're going to extend your stay so we can keep working in the lab a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just talk a little bit about what happened, how you got here, where it all went wrong, where it went right.
Where it went wrong again.
Where it went wrong again.
Yep.
And where it's back right again. So I kind of gave you the intro, but let's start as, you know, when you took opportunity of the internship, but you had an interest, and you mentioned last night at our gala that you always had this creative spark. So can you just talk a little bit about when you first noticed this creative spark and the desire to create something?
Yeah, first off, that gala last night, I just want to shout it out because it was amazing. I think everybody kind of felt that way. You know, and I know everybody here kind of worked, you know, their butts off for it. And I think it paid off and it showed. You know, so that was really cool to just kind of see that whole thing come together. Now that that's past us. So my creative spark, you know, it kind of, as a kid, I've always, you know, movies and music were always a big part of my life, you know. And when I moved from South Florida to here, to Georgia, I started making hip hop music in seventh grade. And so, but before that, actually in like fourth or fifth grade, I've always wanted to like be in a band or something like that. And couldn't sing, you know? So what do you do when you can't sing? You rap.
Okay.
You know, at least in my eyes.
Like, so many people just took offense real quick.
No offense. In my eyes, that's what I did, you know, but it was not like, it was fun. It was always like some type of outlet. You know what I mean? Like all my lyrics, everything that I wrote about, it was always real to me, you know, maybe not at first, those first couple, you know, years, it was kind of, yeah. But then as I started like getting into it, it was a way for me to express myself. And I think that that's like a main, I think as creatives, that's really what we're looking for, is a way to express ourselves. You know, that's what all my tattoos are. That's what my music was. I stopped making music, but, you know, then film came into my life because of music. I had a whole group of friends and we were all, you know, some were singers, some were dancers, some were rappers. So I was, you know, rapping, I was engineering. I was an audio engineer also, kind of. I knew what I was doing. I just didn't know how to, I knew how to do it. I just didn't know what I was doing, you know? But then like we were all broke and we wanted to make music videos, but we didn't want to pay anybody for it because it was all really expensive. So I was like, cool, I'll get a camera. So I got a camera and then I started, you know, making music videos.
Oh, okay.
And so that's kind of how I got
into, just out of necessity.
Yeah.
You've stumbled into a different form of art.
Yeah. And then I kind of, you know, throughout that whole time, it was, especially from my freshman year is when I started like smoking weed and drinking. Right. And that was when it kind of, music kind of took over. I used to play sports too. Like I was big into football, right? And so I used to play football all the time and I was really fast. Like I was always the fastest on my team. But I'm also a small dude, you know what I mean? I'm not very big. So I probably wasn't gonna go anywhere with that, you know? And then when
you started drinking and using, did that pull you away from sports?
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just didn't want to do it. I got lazy, really. Like I didn't want to keep doing it.
Yeah. So you stumbled on the art of visual early. And where were you at the point when you had the opportunity to do the internship? Where were you at with art, with music, with visual arts? How were you expressing that? What was your relationship with that art like?
I was still mostly making music at that point. Like I would make music videos every now and then, but it wasn't like, it just wasn't like a thing. Like I had a camera that just wasn't really used, you know, I would, you know, my dad drag races. And so I'd film him racing. I think I showed you a couple, videos of my dad racing that I took. But it was more so something that I did like on the side, you know? But when I started working here back in 2019, it's kind of when I found that I actually like seeing my visual growth more than I like hearing my growth. Right. And so like when I started being an intern, right. And you started teaching me kind of a lot of everything, you know, almost. Right.
Yeah. Come on in.
Welcome. But so let me preface this real quick. All right. So when I first started making music, I was terrible. You know what I mean? And I think it started in seventh grade. But by the time like
insert song from Andrew.
No, don't.
Please.
In seventh
don't.
Grade.
Yes.
Don't. I don't even know if
you're gonna scour your internet history right now. Yeah. All your profiles.
What please was don't. Your rap name back
please
in
don't.
Grade school?
Not even gonna say it. Not even gonna say it.
Oh, that must have been good.
Was it Surgeon Sergeant Surgeon?
Yeah, you got it before the podcast, bro.
Yeah.
You got it right. Yeah. No, but but it wasn't, there was growth, right? Like, yeah. I'm a lot better. If I were to make music right now, I'm a lot better now than I was.
Yeah, you honed the craft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that growth is a lot like recovery. You know what I mean? Like, you can see, like, where I was 18 months ago to where I was, to where I am now is completely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's night and day. And that's the same thing. And so being able to see that visually in video is a lot more rewarding to me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think when I started working here in 2019 to where I am now, like, my thought process in it was that I want to see where I can go with this, you know? Like, I fell in love with it working here, right? Like, doing the documentaries and doing the podcast,
yeah,
hosting the podcast, you know, and so I wanted to expand on it. And so,
well,
I
you also had a, there's certain people that have a propensity for it or an intelligence for the technology. Mm. And there's been interns that have come, Katie, who's on the ones and twos right now, someone, yeah, who's just like that. They get on the tool and they just intuitively understand how it works. Also, Katie came from an audio background.
Yeah,
I came from an audio background.
Just like us. Yeah.
And you came from an audio background. And what people don't understand about video is it, you can have a bad piece of video and you can fix that. Mm-hmm. But if you have good video with bad audio, you're screwed. You have, yeah, to reshoot it. So audio is so important. And even going further to sound design and things that you don't really notice. If sound design is done really well, you don't know it's there, right? Like, to sound effects.
Yep.
These are all like, if you watch a movie or something and they just muted the sound effect channel or muted the sound design channel or muted the music channel, right? It would be an entirely different experience.
Yeah.
Like, the music, mm-hmm, is so, and the audio is so important to the visual experience.
In fact, right? Like, a lot of things that you hear in movies are more than likely sound design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I feel like there's not a lot of times that they'll keep the natural background. Cause, you know, you got people on set, you got the director yelling cut, whatever. Like, a lot of the birds that you probably hear chirping, a lot of people walking, that's all sound design.
Yeah.
You know? And that's one of the first things that we learned in film school too.
But I love those videos too, like people, like, they'll take specific scenes from movies and they'll remove the music that's there. They'll, mm-hmm, move the sound effects because there's things, it's like, oh yeah, I've seen that movie 100 times. And then, yeah, you watch it and be like, I never realized there was audio in this scene. And, right, but yeah, because it helps be like that immersive experience. So like marrying the audio with the visual.
Yeah.
This makes perfect sense.
There's a clip that I saw like that. And it was, I forgot what movie it was, but they were dancing and it took the music out. And it just had them like their shoes squeaking.
Yeah, the sound. Yeah, yeah.
I've seen that. Oh my gosh, there's a YouTuber, Jamie French. She is notorious for when she does her film reviews, she just adds in extra shoe squeaking and fart sounds. It's incredible.
But yeah, that's what design can do. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Like, it's essential.
So honestly, so this is kind of like was a natural progression for you. You start putting video to audio. We started on podcasts, which is what most interns do when they come. We start with the podcast, and the podcast is a great tool for teaching audio and video,
yep,
and lighting and and editing and posting and everything just from doing one podcast episode. An intern gets exposed to all, like, a lot of facets of what a production is.
Yeah.
They just get it at a lower, kind of like a lighter level. Yeah. Right.
It's more stress-free than if we were to just throw them in a film set.
And then we do a Kratom documentary?
Yeah. That was like...
Was it the first one we did?
That was like my first month there or something.
Yeah.
We were like, we're going to go buy some Kratom from a gas station. I was like, oh, this is where I'm working now. All right.
Yeah.
And then you call Leslie and she's like, you're obsessed with Kratom.
Well, we were learning about it. And
this is for research purposes only.
And this was 2020, so it was relatively newer. It wasn't as known in the market. So...
Yeah.
The documentary is called Kratom, Friend or Foe.
Yeah, it's on the Most High Media app. Shameless plug.
Bang, bang.
Download it now.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And we used to post clips from this Kratom documentary. And there was what Kratom did really well is they had such a street team.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have had like these like algorithm set up, because if we posted a clip, I mean, people would just flood it with all these positive, like, great. And the documentary was, I felt was, we tried to be pretty balanced with it, you know? Mm. I think the only negative thing we said was that the marketing of it was clearly marketed towards people with substance use issues.
Yeah. Yep.
And how it was kind of capitalizing on that, even though it has a lot of good uses.
Yeah.
So we did that. That was your first documentary.
It was.
We interviewed Kratom Dan in... the guy's name, Kratom Dan.
Yeah. We also interviewed my friend Charlie.
We interviewed Charlie.
Chuck. Yeah. Good old Chuck.
So you go through this, you're learning some skills. Mm-hmm. We're shooting documentaries, and you have a pretty good ability to edit pretty quickly. So you kind of gravitated towards the post production, right?
Yeah.
And so at some point, though, you decide to go back to school and learn kind of the other side of film.
Yeah. Cinematography.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
You just mansplained it real quick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's digital cinematography, you know, that's what my degree is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I kind of left Most High.
Kind of.
Kind of. I also, you know, I said this last night too, and I'll, you know, I'll say it here. You know, there was a point where I just kind of thought I was it. We all, a lot of people in recovery do it, right? They get to this point where they're happy, they feel good with themselves, and they're like, I think I can go drink, you know? And so that's what I decided to do, you know? And I told you guys, and I think like 8 months later, I found myself back in, not back, but in Detroit. My parents had moved there like 3 years before, mm-hmm. I think. And I wanted to take my talents to Detroit, as LeBron would say about South Beach. But it was just.
So you moved to Detroit. There's no community really for you there.
No, I don't know anybody. I just know my parents and my brother. That's it.
Jack and Jim.
Yeah.
Barles and James. Is that what they call it? Barles and James?
I have no idea.
You never heard of that?
Nope.
Is that a beer or a whiskey? Or? Well, mess Jim all these Beam? Young ass people in here. Barles and James.
Let the record Google show it. No one in the studio knows what Christian is talking about.
Barles and James. Yeah.
While he's doing that.
It's a brand of flavored wine coolers and malt beverages produced by E&J Gallo Winery.
We need to have a TV.
Introduced
in
1985, initially a wine-based, which is probably why I know about it, because it's probably when I started drinking. It later transitioned to a malt-based beverage.
How do you go from choice, wine cooler to malt-based?
It was a choice beverage in the 80s. You don't remember that? You're not alcoholic. That's why you don't know. The point was that you didn't have a community. You're
no,
just
I
drinking.
No, I had nobody. Yeah. I had, you know, alcohol. That's it. But I mean, to be fair to myself, I don't know if that's the right choice of words, but I don't know if it was because I knew that I had, you know, struggled with addiction in the past, or if it was because I genuinely, for those first couple of years, might have not had a problem. I think it was really probably just because I knew I was an addict.
So you kept like very strict boundaries.
I don't think I blacked out, which I'm a blackout drinker, right? And when I black out, I'm not myself. Like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, right? That's me. So to me, it was a success. If I didn't black out, you know, like then I didn't screw anything up. That's how I kind of gauged it.
Yeah.
But I would be able to drink, you know, I'd be able to have a beer and then not have another beer. And it was fine until it wasn't, you know? And so I think I kind of always knew, you know, when you go back after being in recovery, when you go back out, it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. That's true to me. like, you just have awareness. And I think I tried to convince myself that it was a good thing. I mean, it is a good thing that I have that awareness, but it was like, I tried to convince myself that I wasn't an addict.
Well, I remember having that conversation with you.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember, you know, hoping that you don't have what I have, mm-hmm. right? And maybe you could just have some beers on the weekend and drink like a gentleman.
Yep.
But unfortunately, it's like you needed to kind of prove to yourself in a way, you had to experience that at some level.
Yeah.
Right? To know whether you really could or couldn't, right?
Yeah, it was, I don't think, you and I spoke at least a couple times a month throughout those last 5 years, you know? So it was, we never lost touch. And I do remember that same conversation. And, you know, at that time, I still think I was convinced that I was a normal person.
Well, there was no evidence to the contrary, right? Yeah. Like you were just having a beer and then hanging out, and then
weed's legal in Michigan, so I, you know, I'd be smoking weed.
Yeah, but so you didn't feel like this obsession,
no,
or the phenomena craving,
nope,
necessary. And so because you didn't experience those symptoms, you felt like, okay, this is.
I felt pretty good, man.
It's kind of the worst thing to happen, right? Like to like decide to go back and have a slow burn.
But like, where, because I convinced myself of the same thing, but whereas I had a beer one night and then the next night I'm buying crack, like, I just want to know how it was such a slow burn, because I can't relate to the slow burn side of things. I can relate to completely convincing myself that I'm not, you know, an addicted person, but not that the burn taking that long and then coming to a fiery end.
Yeah, well, I think it helped that I'd never done crack.
Look, I didn't do the crack. Did you not listen to my story? I bought it for somebody else so we'd stop fighting.
The old bought the crack for someone else story.
Yeah. I bought it for somebody else. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was smoking it for them.
But, I mean, my drug of choice was alcohol. I am an alcoholic. You know, my drug of choice was alcohol. I did do coke, only on the weekends.
Like only, a gentleman.
Yeah, yeah. I would freebase it every now and then. But not when I'm in traffic, and then I'll just waddle away and everything will be fine.
I feel like this is like a side note kind of show. So side note, we were at the table last night with my kids, and my daughter just visited Chicago.
Yeah.
And, my wife's going to cringe when she hears this, but, I go, oh yeah, I almost got arrested in Chicago for trying to buy cocaine. Which is just the only fact I have about my experience in Chicago. Yeah. And Jennifer's friend was sitting right next to me, and she was like, oh.
Yeah. I did go to Chicago this summer, though.
Yeah.
Side note.
So this is. Anyway. So side this note, is,
I've never been to Chicago.
Hey. See, this is a side note show. So, yeah, this is a slow progression. Is there a point in this where you feel yourself cross that line and kind of go, oh shit, I think, and then feel like you, well, let me just try to get back hold of this. Do you remember that?
The first time I blacked out. Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't the first time I blacked out, but, since then, the first time I blacked out, I was like, oh, I blacked out. Like, I don't remember last night. And then it was like, all right, but it won't happen again. You know? And I don't remember how long it took for me to not black out again, but I know it blacked out again. And it was probably another 20 times or so until I actually got sober.
So do you think the blacking out, like, induced that craving back? Went from something you were so long without, and then now you're like rapid succession blacking out.
I think that definitely helped, because blacking out is almost like a trauma in itself. You know, it sucks to not know what you did the night before. And me being the kind of blackout person that I am, I usually am not a good person when I'm blackout. Not usually, I'm not a good person when I'm blackout. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. somebody.
No one's like, hey, you blacked out last night and solved fucking cancer.
No.
You know?
Can you imagine if cancer was cured in somebody's blackout?
Uh-huh.
Incredible.
But they wouldn't remember it. So, you know.
If they wrote it down.
Yeah, if they had a camera.
If they knew where they put
it. Like Goodwill Hunting, you know? But he was blackout instead.
Goodwill blackout. Goodwill drinking.
Goodwill drinking.
Oh, that's going to be film? Our short film.
Short film?
Goodwill drinking. Yes.
I'll write the script. yeah, no, I'm not a, you know, I like to play the victim, right? And so it's one of the things I'm learning in therapy, right? Is that I love to play the victim. Now that I'm sober and I'm like, you know, I have 18 months next week. I'm realizing that I actually hate playing the victim. Like in recovery, in sobriety, I don't like it. I don't want to be a victim. And most of the time, nothing was done to me. Most of the time, I did it to myself, you know? And I think that mentality that I had is what progressed that wanting to drink and that needing to drink more. You know, when I would black out, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to remember that I just blacked out. And so what would I do? I drink more.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
pour me a drink.
Yeah.
It's like though, like just that insanity of, oh, here's this terrible thing from when I was drunk. Like, oh, I know it'll solve that. Get drunk again.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, then you create a new terrible thing and then you have to get drunk again. Mm-hmm. And like, it just, it's such a vicious cycle to get out of.
Yep.
But in this though, like you're actively in school at this point, right? Yep. And so you're like maintaining a semblance of, you know, this life that you're wanting to create yourself while mm-hmm. also approaching another bottom.
Yep.
So what did it look like navigating, you know, school and then a dark
alcoholism.
Yeah. You know, but then like you still graduated school at the end of it. It wasn't the classic dropout story.
No, so back in 2015, before I started working here, I actually went to the same school and I dropped out because of my blackouts. Hmm. And so I think part of me was like, I'm not doing that again. No matter what happens this time, I'm finishing it. And I think that's the difference that 10 years makes. Just in my mentality, you know, I was 20 years old when I dropped out last time. You know, I'm about to be 31 now and I have my degree finally. You know, so it took 10 years for me to get there. But it was, part of me is like, it took 10, like boohoo, it took 10 years for me to get there. And then another part of me is like, it fucking took 10 years for me to get there, yeah, you know, but right. I got there. And so that's the type of mentality that I want now. I don't want the, oh, it took me 10 years to get there.
Yeah.
I want the, no, like I did it.
Yeah.
Like no matter what happens, no matter what. And I think that I'm more proud now because of that. Because I was in active addiction going through school. And, you know, I think I graduated with a year sober. You know, I think I got a year sober in March and I graduated in May of this year. So, you know, I had like, 14 months sober or something when I graduated.
Yeah.
And so, but I started in 2022. I started school in 2022.
Yeah.
So it took me 3.5 years, I think. But I did drop out. I did fail some classes. Not drop out. I did fail some classes. And I had to also drop some classes because of my alcoholism, you know.
So this blackout drinking continues, and then as most blackout drunks, they kind of, you know, hit a wall, so to speak, and oh shit moment or a rock bottom moment.
Yep.
In which you come to the realization or the conclusion that you are alcoholic.
Yep.
And so what, returning back from that, right? Like, what was that like to, you know, because I know you, you called me and we talked, you know, you called David, who's a friend of the show here. Mm-hmm. And you had a community of people you could go back to return. What did that feel like returning after that with that realization now?
I mean, this time was completely different because I didn't, when I first tried to get sober for real back in 2017, 2 years before I met you, I was at Insight. And it's like this enthusiastic sobriety kind of thing, right? And there I had like 60 people at all times that I could lean on, you know? And even, you know, I was still there when you and I met, when I started working here. And so it was kind of the same thing. You know, this time around I was with my parents. My brother lived like an hour away and I can call you guys on the phone, you know, I can go to meetings and I did for a while. I went to meetings, but the meetings, I don't really want to get into all that too much, but I couldn't find one that I liked, you know? And so I'll just kind of leave it at that. But so it was kind of just me, you know, and me and the phone, essentially. Luckily, you know, for school, I was knee deep in school, you know, and the way that Full Sail works is that, you know, normally with a normal college, you know, a semester is what, like 3 months? At Full Sail, it's a semester a month.
Oh.
And so, Yeah, you learn, you know, 3 months worth of work in a month, and so you're working constantly. And so when I got sober, I was in school full-time, I had a job full-time, and I was also doing side work with my camera, so I was doing freelance work. And so it kind of took a lot of my time up. I was also on probation,
yeah,
and house arrest for a while.
Yeah, that helps. So,
yeah. My oh shit moment that you were talking about is I got arrested. And when I was in jail, I remember like talking to a guard and being like, do you guys have, you know, an AA book? And they're like, no. And I was like, okay, what kind of jail doesn't have, I feel like a jail should have a big book, but apparently they didn't.
Their Coins for Cons program was lacking.
And so that was kind of like, but when I woke up that night or that morning after realizing what I did, and I don't want to get too much into it because it involves other people and I don't want to hurt them more than I already did.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just kind of, you know, but when I woke up and I realized what I did that the night before, it was my oh shit moment. Like that's, I don't want to ever be that person again. Mm-hmm. And so I think just having that realization that that's who I am when I'm drunk is what first got me sober. Mm. You know,
yeah.
It's not necessarily what keeps me sober now. It can't be. I think as you progress in your recovery, things have to start changing. Yeah. You know, and
well, let's talk about the progression.
Okay.
Because you got into EMDR therapy.
Yes.
And even though we're just talking on the phone and you've been working with us, so we talk regularly, a lot of FaceTime calls as we're working on projects together. I've seen the changes in you. I've seen the change in you. As you're going through EMDR. Mm. So just for people who don't know what that is, just kind of explain that, what got you into it, and what have you experienced in going through EMDR therapy?
Yeah, so EMDR, I can't remember exactly what it stands for.
Eye movement derealization.
Yes, something like that. Something like that. If you want to look it up.
EMDR.
Eye movement. That's what it is. Eye movement.
You want to say it on the mic?
Oh, eye movement desensitization reprocessing therapy.
Oh.
Wow.
What she said.
But literally.
You have a good voiceover voice.
I got a job. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that, by the way. Yeah, so that's what it is. And
now, how did you get into it? What prompted you to seek that form of therapy?
I've known about it for a few years from Darren, who actually was the host of the Rule 62 show with me. If you guys want to go back 5 years and check it out. But so Darren first told me about it like 3 years ago or something. And when I was at Full Sail the first time, which is kind of crazy that everything's kind of coming back full circle at this
moment. Full Sail, full circle.
Yeah.
Full, it's all there.
It's all full.
Is it a full moon?
It might be.
It can be.
I don't know.
It is now.
So when I was at Full Sail the first time, I had a family friend. Pretty much, I'm not going to get too much into that either, but he pretty much whooped my ass, right? And I thought that either I was going to have to kill him or he was going to kill me, you know? And so after that moment is really when I can remember blacking out when I would drink.
Now, you know this now because you were doing the EMDR.
Yeah, well, I've talked to multiple people about it before doing the EMDR too. I just never did it.
Yeah. And so you kind of had already, even before EMDR, you kind of had your finger on that as being kind of a defining moment for you.
Yeah. Because I've always tried to figure out like what's wrong, you know, why am I doing this? I don't want to keep doing this, but I want to keep drinking, you know. So
yeah,
it's an alcoholic way of thinking, I guess. But like, I don't want to keep blacking out, you know. So how can I not black out? Well, I can just not drink. You know, it'd be the sensible thing to do, the normal person thing to do, but not me.
Going to therapy to drink with impunity is crazy.
Hey, you know, I'm not going back out now, but I am in therapy for it. So, you know, but I finally decided to do it because there's only so much that you could talk about with talk therapy, you know? And I felt like I was meeting with my therapist every other week at that point. And I felt like it was just the same thing. You know, at that point, my life was good. It was going well. School was going well. You know, I was working full time and I was doing freelance work. And I don't know if I was working here yet or not, but there just wasn't much to talk about, you know? And so I felt like it was a good, but I wanted to stay in therapy. And so I was like, I thought it was a good opportunity to try out EMDR and see if I can actually better myself that way. And I'm really surprised because I didn't actually know if it was going to work because it looks really weird. You know, you just have like, he just kind of does this with his finger or with a pen. But the way that he described it to me was, you know, when you're on a bus, right? And you're sitting in a seat and you're looking out the window, your feet are planted on the ground, your ass is in the chair. You know you're in a bus, but you're looking out the window and you see everything passing by. And everything that's passing by is your memories. So you know you're in, you know, a safe spot.
Yeah.
But we're going to go and look at all your messed up shit. I don't know why I just said that, but and I'm honestly surprised that it's actually been working. So what I thought it was originally going to do was kind of take my memories away. But what it does is it actually desensitizes you. And so there were 6 prominent memories that we wanted to go over. And when there's 3 of them that we have gone over. And when I think about those memories, I don't really feel anything. There's some times where, like, if I'm in a bad mood, like, I will kind of, and I think about it, I will kind of, like, get a little, but for the most part, it's, you know, there's not much that goes on there anymore.
Yeah.
And so what I really do want to say too, though, is a lot of people think that trauma is like, and you guys talked about this last week too, I believe on the show last week, but a lot of people think that trauma is, you know, something like horrifying that has to happen, you know, like war veterans or something like that. But everybody has trauma differently and everybody perceives trauma differently. What's traumatic to you might not be traumatic to me. What's traumatic to me might not be traumatic to you, mm-hmm. you know, but it's all trauma and everybody has it, you know? And I think that it going through this treatment so far, which I'm pretty much done because I'm about to move down here. But I mean, it's just, it's kind of opened up my eyes to who I actually kind of want to be. It's done more than just like desensitize my trauma. You know, it's kind of helped me kind of focus in on what my life can be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I think like when these traumas are unresolved, mm-hmm. I feel like there's a, the way I would explain it is like there's like a portion of us that's paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you come to terms with that, you come to peace, you become desensitized to it. That memory doesn't hold the same weight. And so it frees up your consciousness or your subconscious to maybe focus on some other things, like yeah. enjoying a fucking sunrise or something. I don't know, or a cold glass of Pepsi, or you know what I mean? Like
a cold glass of Pepsi.
Oh yeah, we love Pepsi.
Yeah, Pepsi's great.
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong room.
We love Coke too.
I do
just
too.
Just the other kind of
the
Coke.
The nasal kind.
That's how we got here. That's how we all got here. Because we love Coke.
Without the Ola.
Yeah, so I think like it does, because you're freed up now to start building your life now. Yeah. Like, because you're not carrying this like bag of bones with you everywhere you go, that you can actually wake up with some hope and some creative energy and maybe a vision for yourself that doesn't include, you know, carrying that weight.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually want to do a short film about it, you know?
Yeah.
There was a dream I had. I think I'd shown one of you.
Definitely. Maybe told both me of about y'all. It.
But I really want to make that into a short film too.
So as we're just to kind of keep us on track here, so let's talk into a little bit of what we're doing now.
Okay.
Right. As we're taking content that we've been filming for the last 6 years and turning it into 90 episodes and 90 lessons.
Montana Society.
90 finished episodes, which
It's a lot.
But this kind of noise of how creativity and storytelling helps shift the narrative, and how we're leveraging creativity, we're leveraging content, we're leveraging the art of storytelling to help people. Yeah. And what that's like for you now, having done EMDR, having come to these realizations about yourself, being in a relatively good place in your spirit or soul or body or whatever, and now working on it, what's that like for you? And what do you feel like is possible with using storytelling, leveraging storytelling to help other people?
I mean, it's what we do here. I mean, bottom line, that's, you know, what everything that I have, even in school, when I was in school, everything that I made was about mental health or about addiction. Even when I was in active addiction, I was still, which is kind of weird to be honest with you, but it was still like, I didn't think I was an addict, but I still want to help other addicts. It was like, it was a weird fucking mentality to have. But, it was still about that, you know. It's something I've always wanted to do as a kid, was to just help people. I just didn't know how, I think. And I think when I was making music, I even have some songs about depression and about, I believe, addiction too. But now I'm, you know, it's visual storytelling, you know, and what we do with Montana Society, mm-hmm. is the same thing, you know. For the past, what, six summers, bringing a group of people from around the country to Montana to, you know, fix an underground bunker into an Airbnb, where along the way they learn about the steps themselves. We film it, and then we turn it into an educational platform that takes the steps, breaks them up into 90 lessons. Mm-hmm. And each one of those lessons goes with an episode. And it's a lot of work, you know, but it's a whole nother way of being able to expose people. If it's just a way for you to help understand, like to help you understand,
yeah,
and to be able to visually see something. The reason you're always sending me like snaps of what you're reading, right? Yeah. I don't read. You know what I mean?
So I'm, I have to read to you.
Yeah, I'm a visual person. You know what I mean? So being able to see what happens and how it can affect people, I think is just going to open up the doors to so many other things. Yeah. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I love what we do so much, is because people can visually see it.
Yeah.
They can visually see that change that I was talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
Another full circle moment.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it definitely shows in, you know, you definitely brought a renewed creativity to the project, mm-hmm, and a renewed kind of understanding of what we're trying to do, yeah, you know, and communicating that at a deep level. And it's, we can feel and see the difference in like you touching on the content and editing it and putting the story together from your own perspective. I think part of that's being a little bit fresh from the wound still, yeah, right? That there's something you're tapping into there. But I think it's also like just a testament to your ability and the creative force that you are to be able to just, you know, it's really, when you're looking at the whole scope of the whole thing, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah,
you know? It's a lot. So you have to dive into, I'm editing this minute,
yep,
of a 20 minute episode. And do, I could get this minute right, and then I'm going to move to the next minute and get that minute right. And hopefully there's a good piece of 3 minutes of good footage that we don't have to like cut forever. Mm. But there's a lot in editing. You're holding a lot of those tensions, right? And being able to craft a story out of footage that's essentially captured by amateurs. Most 90% of the footage is not captured by a professional camera person.
Yep.
So we're taking kind of amateur footage and turning it into a show. And I know editors who would just be like, I'm not doing that. Right. Like, that's crazy. I'm
literally not, the people I know have been like, why are they doing that?
Yeah. 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 So it takes a special kind of crazy, but really it takes a special kind of talent,
yeah,
to be able to see something that's not there, which is what we're doing with this footage. You know, yeah, you got,
especially this year.
Yeah. Especially the year you're working on. Yeah. All right, so let's start to land the plane here. And you mentioned kind of this delineation between mental health and addiction, mm, and the misconceptions of kind of like, because I know you've dealt with both, and you, yeah, deal with both. So do you want to talk about that a little bit as we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, it's, they go hand in hand. You know, I definitely know that my drinking and drug use was because of my depression. That's what it started. It started as a fun thing, you know what I mean? But when you get to a place where you find that it actually helps because you've just been so fucked up for so long, you know? I mean, even as a kid, I was dealing with depression, right? So my whole life up until this moment, it's been, I remember being in therapy when I was like 8 or 9 years old, mm-hmm, you know? And I'm kind of thinking like, what does a 8 or 9 year old have to be in therapy for? But I was, you know, and I was sad at that point, you know, and I wasn't, especially this, even, I don't know where to go with this. All right, so last night we had the gala, right? And we played The First Step, which is the short film that I wrote, directed, produced, edited, filmed, and starred in, because in Michigan, I don't have anybody,
right?
So I have to do everything myself. And I wrote that when I wanted to kill myself. And it was, I guess it was perfect timing because that month was script writing class. So instead of doing the generic thing, the easy thing, you know, which would just be make some type of basic thing, I decided to be raw and emotional and just tell the truth in a script. And that changed something in me. Like, I don't know what it was, but even in recovery, I think I was 6 months sober at that point. Even being sober, I still wanted to kill myself. You know, like, you're not, it doesn't, just because you're sober doesn't mean you're happy. Mm-hmm. You know, and just because everybody has their own shit that they're dealing with, you know, and depression, anxiety, and now PTSD have played a huge impact on my life in general. You know, EMDR therapy, recovery. And I just want people to know that if you're dealing with any of that stuff, you're not alone. There is help out there. We can help. You can reach out to us. You can reach out to me personally if you want. And just know you're not alone. Like, there's no good reason to kill yourself at all. Suicide is never the option. And I hate to even like think that it was an option for me at some point. Because looking at, you know, a year later, it's only been a year and my life is completely different.
Yeah.
You know?
Bonus round.
Bonus round?
Yeah.
I got a bonus round?
Yeah. It's like, oh shit. You could have not been here doing none of this.
Mm-hmm. Montana Society would have been fucked.
It would have been the Wampana Society.
I don't know if I would have done it, but I wanted to, you know, and that's enough, honestly. Yeah. And so
that's a type of hell right there. Just wanting to unalive yourself is a type of hell, even in the degrees of that and what that is.
I mean, my life was so uncertain at that point.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going to happen. I was still on house arrest, you know, all that stuff was going on. And so it was like, I didn't know where I was going, you know? And I think about it now, I still don't know where the fuck I'm going. But I know ending it is not an option.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you wrapped the show up really well with that.
Yeah.
Because normally we'd ask you to say something, but you said something.
Mm-hmm. I know how these things go, man.
Sarah, any final thoughts? Anything you would like to, anything left unsaid? A song you'd like to sing?
No, I'm going to rap, actually.
Oh, yes.
No.
Because you can't sing. So
yeah.
Full circle?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's really cool to hear, you know, how you went from the internship, like the OG internship back in the day, to then, you know, doing some more, you know, exploration, research, and then coming back and then, you know, still having like that relationship with Most High, still having that relationship with Christian, and then now being able to flourish in a new way outside of the internship and outside of school and inside of recovery and all like the entire full circle thing. I think there's a lot of hope in your story. There's a lot of strength in there. There's a lot of there's fuck shit that happened, but there's a lot of right shit happened at the right time in there too. And I think, you know, for anybody listening, that could be a profound thing to hear, going from like, hey, you wanted to kill yourself and you didn't, thank God. And then now look where you are, and who knows where things are going, but they're trending positive.
Trending upward, buddy. Things are looking up.
There you go, pal.
It's only down from here now. You've peaked. And good luck. I'd like to thank the donors and supporters for sponsoring this epic show. I'd like to thank Katie and Jason and Kim and Jose for showing up here and committing to a life of internship for 6 months. And
they're killing it, by the way.
Yeah.
Yep.
And thank you, Andrew, for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
This has been another epic episode of The Most High Show.
Bye-bye.